You're not our real son anymore, Adrian. We need you to understand that everything changes now that we have Emma. My adoptive mother's voice was cold, calculating. The house, the college fund, the business, it all goes to her now, our actual daughter. But Mom, I've been your son for 22 years. No, Adrian, you were a placeholder. My adoptive parents disinherited me when their biological daughter was born after 15 years of infertility. Hi, I'm Adrian. Today, I'm going to tell you my story. But before I continue, please like, share, and subscribe to hear more stories like this. You know how people say blood is thicker than water? Well, I learned that lesson the hard way when the people who raised me for 22 years basically told me I was nothing more than a practice run for their real child. Let me paint you a picture of my life before everything went to hell. Richard and Patricia Morrison adopted me when I was just 3 months old. They'd been trying for a baby for 7 years at that point, and the doctors had pretty much told them it wasn't happening. So they chose me, this little baby whose teenage mom couldn't keep him. And for 22 years, I thought I was the luckiest kid alive. My dad, sorry Richard, owned a chain of hardware stores across three states. Patricia was a real estate developer. They weren't just wealthy, they were the kind of people who had their names on hospital wings. And they gave me everything. Private schools, summer camps in Europe, a car for my 16th birthday. But more than that, they gave me what I thought was love. I had just graduated from Northwestern with a degree in business management. Richard had been grooming me to take over the hardware stores. I knew every aspect of that business, spent my summers working in different departments, learning from the ground up. The plan was always for me to get my MBA, then step into a management role. Then Patricia got pregnant. I still remember the day they told me. We were having Sunday dinner, you know, the kind where Patricia would make her famous pot roast, and we'd talk about the week ahead. They were both glowing, couldn't stop smiling at each other. Adrian, honey, we have the most wonderful news, Patricia said, reaching for Richard's hand. After all these years, God has finally blessed us with a miracle. I was genuinely happy for them. 22 years of wanting something so badly and finally getting it? I stood up and hugged them both. That's incredible. I'm going to be a big brother. The look they exchanged should have been my first warning. Over the next few months, things started changing. Slowly at first, Richard stopped asking me to review the quarterly reports. Patricia would forget to include me in family dinners. When I'd show up at the house I grew up in, they'd act surprised, like I was a guest who'd overstayed his welcome. Emma was born on a Tuesday in March. Healthy, beautiful, everything they'd dreamed of. I was there at the hospital, brought flowers and a teddy bear I'd picked out weeks before. But when I asked to hold my baby sister, Patricia pulled her away. Maybe when she's older, she said, not meeting my eyes. The real bomb dropped 2 weeks later. Richard called me to his home office, the same office where he'd taught me to read financial statements when I was 12. Adrian, sit down. We need to discuss your future. I sat in the leather chair across from his desk, the same chair where I'd spent countless hours learning the business. Now that Emma's here, he began, not even pretending this was hard for him, Patricia and I have been reevaluating our estate planning. Okay, I said, not understanding where this was going. The business, the properties, the trusts, they'll all be going to Emma now, our biological daughter. I felt like someone had punched me in the stomach. What are you talking about? You're a smart boy, Adrian. Surely you understand. We adopted you when we thought we couldn't have children of our own. But now that we have Emma, our actual flesh and blood, it only makes sense that our legacy goes to her. I'm your son, I said, my voice barely a whisper. You were our ward, he corrected, and we've done our duty by you. You have your education, that's more than most get. But it's time you made your own way in the world. Patricia came in then, Emma in her arms. We've also decided it would be best if you found your own place to live. We need the space for Emma's nursery expansion. They were kicking me out of the only home I'd ever known. The room they wanted for nursery expansion? It had been my room for 22 years. You have 2 weeks, Richard added, like he was firing an employee. I wish I could say I fought back right then, told them exactly what I thought. but I was in shock. 22 years of being their son, and it meant nothing. I was just a placeholder until the real thing came along. My best friend Marcus thought I was joking when I called him that night. "Dude, stop playing. Your parents worship you." "I'm serious, Mark. They want me out in 2 weeks." Marcus Chen had been my roommate at Northwestern. His dad ran a tech company in Seattle, and Marcus was back in Chicago working for a venture capital firm. "That's insane. What about the business? You know more about those stores than Richard does?" He was right. I did know more. And that's when the anger finally broke through the hurt. "They can't just erase you, man," Marcus said. "You have rights." "Apparently not. I talked to a lawyer today. Since I'm over 18, they can disinherit me whenever they want. The adoption doesn't guarantee me anything." But Marcus had this look in his eye, the same look he got when he was about to crush someone in chess. "Maybe not legally, but there are other ways to get justice." That's when I met Diane Winters. Marcus's girlfriend Sarah worked at a law firm, and Diane was their top investigator. Former FBI, the kind of person who could find dirt on a saint. We met at a coffee shop in Lincoln Park, and I told her everything. "Rich people always have secrets," she said, stirring her latte. "The question is, how deep do you want to dig?" "I don't want to do anything illegal," I said. "Who said anything about illegal? I'm talking about the truth. You lived in that house for over 2 decades. You must have seen things, heard things." She was right. I had access to everything. Richard's business files, Patricia's real estate dealings. Years of being the trusted son meant I knew where all the bodies were buried, so to speak. The first discovery came 2 weeks later, just as I was moving my stuff into Marcus's spare room. Diane had found my biological mother, Rebecca Torres. She lived in Milwaukee now, worked as a nurse. And the story she told was very different from what Richard and Patricia had told me. "I didn't want to give you up," she said over coffee, tears in her eyes. "I was 18, yes, but I had a job, a support system. The Morrisons, they pressured me, made it clear that fighting them would be futile. I recorded everything, every conversation, every revelation, because Rebecca wasn't the only one with a story to tell. Then came the business investigation. Remember how I said I knew that company inside and out? Well, I started documenting some interesting patterns. Nothing illegal, mind you, just questionable. Like how Richard always insisted on cash transactions for large orders, or how certain inventory had a habit of disappearing and reappearing. My friend Jennifer Reeves from Northwestern was a journalism major, now working for the Tribune. She was very interested in these patterns. But the real bombshell came from an unexpected source, Patricia's sister Catherine. Catherine had always been the black sheep of the family, ostracized for marrying beneath her station. She reached out after hearing I'd been disinherited. "They did the same thing to me," she said over lunch. "When I refused to marry the man our parents chose, they cut me off completely. Patricia got everything." She handed me a folder. Inside were documents from a private investigator she'd hired years ago. Documents that showed Patricia had been pregnant once before, 15 years before Emma. She'd hidden it from everyone, including Richard. Had the baby and gave it up for adoption. A boy she'd had with someone who wasn't her husband. "She gave up her first child to protect her image," Catherine said, then spent years playing the victim about infertility. The investigation into that child led to another revelation. Patricia had been paying the adoptive family for years to keep quiet, monthly payments that came from a real estate slush fund. Emma's first birthday was a massive affair. The Morrisons rented out the country club, invited everyone who was anyone. I wasn't invited, of course, but Marcus's parents were. They brought me as their plus one. "Adrian?" Patricia's face went white when she saw me. "What are you doing here?" "Mrs. Chen invited me," I said pleasantly. "I couldn't miss my sister's first birthday." Richard appeared at her side, his face turning red. "You need to leave. Now." "Actually, I have something for Emma." I pulled out an envelope. "It's for her college fund." The party was in full swing. All their society friends watching. They couldn't make a scene. Patricia led me to where Emma was playing with blocks. "She's beautiful," I said, kneeling down. "Hi, Emma. I'm Adrian. I'm your brother." "She doesn't have a brother," Patricia hissed. "Oh, but she does," I said, still smiling at Emma. "In fact, she has two brothers, right, Patricia? The color drained from her face completely. I don't know what you're talking about. Sure you do. Daniel Martinez? Lives in Naperville? You've been sending his family $5,000 a month for 15 years? Richard grabbed my arm. We need to talk. Now. But it was too late. Catherine had been recording everything on her phone, live streaming to Facebook. The confrontation, Patricia's panicked face, Richard's barely contained rage. Is it true? One of Patricia's real estate partners had approached. You have another child? The dominoes fell fast after that. Jennifer's article came out the next day. The city council launched their investigation that week. The IRS got involved after someone, I have no idea who, sent them years of financial records. Richard's hardware store started hemorrhaging money as contractors pulled their accounts. Patricia's real estate deals fell through one by one as partners distanced themselves. The country club quietly revoked their membership. The hospital took their name off the wing. They tried to blame me, of course. Showed up at Marcus's apartment screaming about ungrateful children and betrayal. I recorded that too. Posted it online. The comments were brutal. You're destroying everything we built, Richard raged. All because your feelings got hurt? No, I said calmly. I'm just letting people see who you really are. You destroyed everything yourselves years ago. The legal troubles took about 8 months to fully materialize. They had to sell the house to pay legal fees, then the vacation home, then liquidate the hardware stores at a massive loss. Patricia's real estate license was suspended pending investigation. They moved into a two-bedroom apartment in the suburbs. They never went to jail. Rich people rarely do. But they lost everything else. Their money, their status, their reputation. Even their precious Emma would grow up knowing her parents were the people who threw away one son and hid another. I started my own business with a loan from Marcus's dad, consulting for small hardware stores, helping them modernize and compete with the big chains. It's doing well. I even hired some of Richard's former employees, the good ones who'd been pushed out for having integrity. Rebecca and I have dinner once a month now. She never remarried, never had other kids. Says I was her one and only. It's awkward sometimes, building a relationship with someone who should have raised you. But we're trying. And Daniel? My half-brother? We met for coffee last month. He's a good kid. Sophomore at DePaul studying engineering. His adoptive parents told him the truth when everything came out. He was angry at first, at Patricia, at the situation, but not at me. She chose her image over both of us, he said. At least now we know we have each other. The Morrisons tried to reach out once, about 6 months ago. A letter delivered through their lawyer. They wanted to reconcile, said they'd made a mistake. They'd learned their lesson, understood now that family wasn't about blood. I sent the letter back unopened, but I did include a note. I'm not your son anymore, remember? I'm just the ward whose duty you did. And my duty to you? It's done. Last I heard, they were still in that apartment. Richard works as a manager at someone else's hardware store. Patricia sells real estate for a company that used to be her competitor. They see Emma on weekends, split custody with Richard's brother, who got temporary guardianship during the legal troubles. People ask if I feel guilty, if I think I went too far. But here's the thing. I didn't make them threaten my biological mother. I didn't make them hide Patricia's first child. I didn't make them cook their books or bribe city officials. All I did was shine a light on things they'd done in the darkness. They created me in a way, raised me to be thorough, to pay attention to details, to know their business inside and out. They just never imagined I'd use those skills to reveal who they really were. The Adrian who exists now? He's doing just fine. Better than fine, actually.